thought was that if it was a facility caring for three or fewer adults, would not be required to be identified as special use, but would otherwise be permitted. In our last meeting, at the conclusion of the discussion, I think Mark was making the point that where we're going to do this, where we're
could include, so it's larger facilities, right? And I don't see that that's totally inappropriate at all to put into a industrial district.
And the industrial district in particular was explained to me as a way that you could drive a van into a garage door in an industrial area, close the door, unload, remote, without having to, you know, and have an open space that's lined with private site area. So I would definitely include the industrial district in the first should be on.
Okay. So if we limited it to those.
Yeah, I'm much more willing to accept a looser definition of over height if we don't, because we say straight up that we're not gonna take people, I don't want to.
The other thing that I saw in the legislative discussion was Long Beach specifically identified family daycare within the permitted home occupation. Now, we don't, our home, we define home occupation in our codes, but we don't have any specific examples. We could add specific examples that, or otherwise address that. Adult daycare facilities that serve less than three or fewer adults could be an appropriate home occupation. Now, I noticed childcare, we don't have any childcare rules either. And I noticed the childcare rules in Long Beach have 6 children. Two of them three, which are under Tuesday. I certainly understand that from a sanity standpoint. I'm not sure what those three is, but my point is, we don't really address that either.
And it could extend to adult care. So let me ask a question about that, because it strikes me that the critical piece in the three or less range, and maybe in the slightly larger range, is that these be owner-occupied dwellings. Is that the point that you're trying to make?
Home occupation, you have to live.
Okay, good. Because I think what you want to avoid is somebody who's an entrepreneur buying a home in a neighborhood, using it, not living there, just simply using it as a business in a residential neighborhood. So if you feel that
you have a facility, a commercial facility, you're gonna have people, some people will go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right, that's right.
And some people will go to work at 3 o'clock, I mean, I'm just.
Right.
Yeah.
So understand what that means. That's a 23-hour-a-day facility, potentially.
It could be a 24-hour-a-day facility.
If it's a non-residential setting, right?
It's a non-residential setting.
I'm okay with the one that's non-residential.
Right, and do they have to be able to come in each week? Do we have to regulate that?
So, well, to me, we're borrowing trouble in regards to that.
I agree.
If they're going to be regulated by a state agency, the operation under obtaining Medicaid dollars, all those rules are gonna apply anyways. We don't have to oversee that piece of it. What starts to become a question though is, what happens if you're going to this facility and they only take private pay, and there's 7 individuals, and all of us around the table have a mom or a dad, and they go, we take them there, and we're writing checks. Rather than, and they don't take any Medicaid dollars. That's where there's.
No regulation.
Other than the fact that the family's gonna have an eagle, if they're dropping the kind of money we're talking about here, they're gonna have an eagle eye on things to make sure that things are being done appropriately for their mom or their dad. I'm just, that's the only thing in my mind that.
Well, they have the impression that somebody is regulating it because, you know, we've given a license or we said it's okay. So if it's okay in the city of Savannah, if somebody didn't even go up, the Savannah, the city of Savannah said it was okay, then I'm sure that they're meeting all the standards.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with I think, the same organization that led us up to, it's called National Adult Day Services Association, which is suburban DC. And she was very, her view is that if a facility becomes a Medicaid facility, it cannot be accommodated in a neighborhood, under a neighborhood adult care subzoning law. It's a totally different kind of enterprise. So I don't know how we separate out how we zone a Medicaid facility, which is a big business, versus something that's intended for the neighborhood. And that's a dilemma, I think, for us.
You've got
say adult daycare center, a center where adults are given care for them, which is 12 hours of training, 25 hours a day.
To me, that's, that, even that language is nebulous. But for me, anyway, does that mean that, that any individual adult can't be served for more than 12 hours? Or does that mean that if you drop your mom off at 6 o'clock in the morning and I pick her up at 6 p.m. and I drop my mom off at 6 p.m. and I pick her up at 6 a.m.?
I would almost prefer an hour designation, you know, not open past 10 o'clock and then before 10 o'clock a.m., right?
Well, the districts clearly have that, have those requirements already.
I think part of our goal here is to minimize disruption to the neighborhood. Okay.
Which
so,
this does.
Except for the time. I think the 10 to 5 as a not in operation thing is legal. I think
all would be, all would be, all would be interpretation of that hour of operation.
What about our three?
I don't think our three and our four, because they don't have that. But if we do this, we're going to have to go back and amend each of these provisions to identify adult day service as an appropriate use. And we could add an hour solicitation into R3 and R4.
And what about
M1? And M1.
Somebody wants to open up one of these facilities in M1 and wants variance, that's permissible. They would just have to come to council for it, correct?
Right.
No.
Well, it's not.
No. You would go to the board of zoning appeals, and I don't want that.
Okay.
So a lot of second shifts actually were left, so you guys have to come and ask people out.
Well, you'd actually, as practical matter, you'd have to be able to burden them.
Well, not in a V2. In a V2, forget the scale, but hopefully later.
Do we have business complaints about our hours of operation in our current zoning for the various business? Then why don't we just use those hours to call it a day?
Right. That's what I'm saying. That doesn't cover the hours. Doesn't cover the hours.
But I mean, we could. We can either refer it or add those hours in.
If we're going to limit it to ours, I say 10 to 5. And say that's just the deal.
Okay.
We're going to have a public
hearing.
We can do that.
Oh, close. 10.
Yeah, we're going to have a public hearing on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of work yet to do.
I know. Yeah, I mean, if somebody really feels that that's egregious, then they'll come in and tell us, right?
But your point, Mark, is you could have different hours for an R3 and an R4 than you would for
R1 and R2.
Well, R1 and R2 doesn't.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, for compared to a business, you know, B1, B2 kind of thing.
Yeah.
You could have separate, different hours for the R3 and R4, correct?
Yes.
To make it more palatable.
More restrictive than R3 and R4.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So what we're gonna do is we're gonna limit where this can be done. But we're going to take out the Department on Aging requirements, the substantive requirements.
Right.
We've done great work to fix this. We've come a long way. I hurt my shoulder patting us on the back there.
No, you're fine.
We're doing
so
good.
So
we're doing
good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I got some.
Do you have any thoughts on any of this?
Do we still have a concern with private pay, non-Medicare?
Not so much.
So that the market figure that out.
Yeah, they're still going to have to be, especially because they're going to be limited into places where they can do it, but we're not going to regulate the substance. As a practical matter, if you're going to, I think you mentioned, somebody mentioned to me when I've been talking about this, as a practical matter, if you're going to have six or seven folks, you're going to want the Medicaid reimbursement. You're going to be complying with those rules anyway.
And beyond that, remember that all of this is basically complaint driven, right? We're not going to be driving around Sylvania trying to find somebody that's in violation. So if you have Medicaid facility that seems to be non-compliant, we're going to get major complaints about it, and then we'll go into enforcement.
Right. So, and we've addressed the childcare thing too, which I think is good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's good.
Good job. Any other about that? If not, move on to topic two. Topic two. Proposed ordinance number 82-2016, memo of understanding with Sylvania Township regarding economic development. And I gotta tell you, I'm a little fuzzy on the history.
I got a little detail in our last conversation.
Okay, you wanna? Let's just review the history of this. Who's best to do that?
I'm not fine.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Well, the mayor and I started meeting with, and Kevin.
Actually, let's start before that.
Mm-hmm.
John Crandall approached me mm-hmm. when he became chairman of the trustees last January, saying it would really be very nice to have some sort of an agreement between the city and the township that would help lead to cooperation for JEDs and annexations, and that the township was willing to employ an attorney from Columbus that had done work like this in the past. Her name was
Wanda Carter,
and we put her in touch with Leslie. Leslie continued. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and we met several times over the course of last year. I think starting right when Mr. Crandall became chairman of the trustees and continued till December when we first brought this to council for consideration. And we negotiated everything and really tried to identify properties that we could agree on annexing and working out a JED agreement. And we weren't able to identify specific properties, so what we were able to agree to is the Memorandum of Understanding, which is before you, which it just says that we'll work together. We'll try to identify properties to annex that the township won't agree to or object to an annexation on, and also that we would try to work together on a JED. And as part of that agreement, Wanda suggested percentages of income tax revenue sharing that she has negotiated with other cities and townships that have entered into these types of agreements, and also the Ohio Revised Code does provide for property tax reimbursements to townships by the cities upon annexation. So we took a look on a declining basis over a period of 12 years. So Juan and I took, and you can see the revenue sharing isn't even defined. It's 20 to 40 years. That's not even, hasn't even been identified. So this exhibit, the percentages, the term is really not set in stone. It's still, we haven't identified a property that we can even agree on is for either an uncontested annexation or a JED. So this provides a general framework, but it certainly isn't, this is what's going to happen. We're going to keep 80%, they're going to get 20% if it's the less than half mile boundary extension. And it certainly doesn't, we haven't identified any property that this would apply to. So that's the history.
As far as council goes, my recollection is that you shared the agreement with council.
Yep.
We referred it to
on
this
December
committee.
19th, yep.
And then
the ordinance was presented and referred on
right.
December 19th.
And then we never met on that until tonight.
A meeting was scheduled for January 4th.
Right,
it was
but we canceled.
Mm-hmm.
We canceled it.
I believe the discussion
mm-hmm.
at the time was that we felt that it was most appropriate for the township to approve this first.
That's my recommendation,
yep.
not to put pressure on
right.
the township
right.
for their initiative. So I recommended that you not
right.
pass it.
Right.
However, I had given you updates at two or three executive sessions, as I recall, during the course of the year, as to the progress of the negotiations. We started out with a lot of...
And that was, in the context of the dispute over the collection of the police.
It started, that was one of the issues. But that was resolved by the county auditor and the county prosecutor, I believe. But we know, I brought you updates as to the hopes that the administration had for this agreement, that we could tie together a property for annexation and a property farther from the city limits for a JED, and that both the city and the township could benefit from those tax dollars being collected, rather than have those tax, income tax dollars in the township go back to the communities where those people live, or not be collected at all. That was the game, the aim for the discussions. And Mr. Crandall was also very interested in not having the disagreement between the city and the township on annexations that come along, because we cooperate so well in so many other ways. He wanted to try to find a way to not have those agreements. Well, as it turned out, we recommended several properties, both that could be annexed or could become JEDs, and they were unable to agree on any of them because they kept going back to the standard reply of not one square inch. Can we as trustees designate for annexation and everything? So the project, the agreement changed from an actual working document to a demonstration or a feel-good document of, yes, the city and the township can get along, but that's about all it is. Mm-hmm. And that's what we brought to you in December. As the year was expiring on Mr. Crandall's chairmanship here.
So my, I spoke with Doug a little earlier because I recalled that it had come to council and that we had made it, the decision not to act on it based on the town, giving room for the township to take the initial action. So I feel a little uncomfortable to now step away from
it. So that is that what this represents, is some modifications?
So what
well, this is what you sent us last week, right?
Well, yeah, what, no, what I sent you, all right. I don't think I had ever commented on the agreement, per se.
I think that's right. The January 4th meeting is when you were going to make your comments that didn't happen.
And then we decided not to go forward with that. And what I shared with you, last week, was a reflection of my discomfort with Exhibit A of the agreement. I think the agreement says we will identify parcels to agree on. I don't have the, I don't know what I did with my copy of the agreement. Do you have the agreement?
Yeah. Is that it? That's
yeah, this is the ordinance. Yeah. I put this, this must be my briefcase. Anyway. So the agreement says we agree to the annexation of initial parcel. We agree we'll identify a property for a JED. We agree
I think also then if you look at paragraph one, Doug, it says utilizing as a guide to the amount Exhibit A service payment. The parties further agree they will negotiate a service payment to be made by the city to the township, utilizing as a guide to the amount Exhibit A attached here to. Said amounts to be based upon the amount of revenue received by the city as a result of the annexation.
Okay, so there are two types of revenue. One is income tax, and the other is real estate tax. And there are provisions in the revised code that provide for sharing of real estate revenue that do not extend to income tax. The lack of specificity in Exhibit A if we're not annexing the property into the city and we're going to do a JED, I cannot imagine a situation in which I would agree that the city would get less than 50% of the income tax revenue from that parcel. And we wouldn't get any real estate tax from that parcel. So that's why I had, that was the first red light to me when I looked at Exhibit A. So then I went back and I looked at the statute. And I'm a little uncomfortable signing agreements saying, we're going to do this, and this is an example when I'm not going to do this at 80-20.
Didn't you just say it's a guideline? Did I misunderstand that? That this is nothing?
Yeah, but it's not a guideline. I mean, it is, but it'll become, it, look, if we adopt this, that's going to be, that's where we're going to be.
Right.
And we're not there. I'm not going to, we're not going to do an 80-20 split where we get 20% on a jet that isn't annexed to the city. Are we? I mean, I know you guys, you didn't, okay, this was prepared by their lawyer. I understand that. But I don't think we're going to do that. And I don't want to give them the impression that we would.
Well, it was meant as an incentive for them to identify a property to be annexed to the city without opposition. For the two to be paired at the same time. And to identify properties, I believe it's a half a mile from city limits, that we would receive some income at all. So it was an incentive for them to participate in the program. And even with those incentives, they were unwilling to participate. And even though we identified some properties for it.
Can I ask a practical question? How much land is there outside beyond the 1 mile boundary from the anywhere from the edge of the city limits that is in Sylvania Township? Let's start there and work backwards.
How much is beyond a mile?
Beyond 1 mile. From any edge of any city, because to me this is from any parcel that's connect, that's part of the city of Sylvania, correct?
But we're really teeny. And the township is really big, so they're definitely part of the
city. So yeah, park yourself at the corner of Sylvania and McCord.
Yep.
Okay, which is about, I mean, that's not true, Sylvania and King.
Yep.
And then drive west, southwest for a mile. Where does that put you? It puts you still west, smack dab in the middle of the township, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Township goes all the way out to where Dick Moses is developing those homes and beyond, right?
It goes out to Secor Metro Park entrance.
Mm-hmm. That's a couple miles.
Yeah, there's a lot of room. So this property we would never be able to annex.
Well, it's all developable, too. It's all farm.
Absolutely.
Right? Unless you want to
get
a school there, apparently. But,
So if we do this, what do we get and what's our obligation? Do we have police? Will we have police service once if they're part of the JED or not?
Mm-hmm.
Our obligation is to administer the tax collection.
And that's it.
But we would be reimbursed for that collection service.
Right, I recall that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's tax that doesn't exist in the township today. So they're going to have to add the tax. Is that we're talking real estate
that's
or we're talking...
Township doesn't add. Township cannot add income tax.
So that's the whole point. That's the benefit that they get, is they would be allowed to share in a payroll tax revenue that the city collects.
Which we would, that's the part about us administering it. Right? So...
I don't, maybe I'm being, look, this,
yeah,
this is just my thinking,
yeah, right.
And if I'm wrong-headed on this, I'm perfectly willing to be convinced otherwise. I'm just, that was my thinking. I wanted to share it with you in advance.
Yeah. and I took it that way, right? I understood that. I guess, though, I'd like to take a look at it from a more global perspective. I certainly understand and respect Doug's ability as a negotiator, and I will back that horse lots of times, but I think that this is an issue that's related to our improving relationship with the township. As I've been sitting here now for 13 years, and we've not had a better relationship with the township and the township trustees than we do today. And I think if Sylvania Township and Sylvania City are both going to prosper, we've got to figure out a way to maximize our ability to work together, right? And I think what this document does is a provide a good faith effort on the part of the trustees to work with the city, right? And I think that you all negotiated that in good faith as well. The fact that it's simply a guideline and not a mandate is comforting to me in the sense that we have the ability as a council to negotiate any future deal that comes along, walk away from any future deal that comes along, and embrace a deal that is mutually beneficial, right? And so I'm less concerned at this point with those caveats that this is harmful to us to move forward than I am that it's harmful if we push back on a deal that's been negotiated and has gotten us to this point of cooperation. So I'm not the negotiator, I'm the conciliator, but I would prefer to take that route at this point.
I think that that was well stated, Mark. And keep in mind, the same is true in reverse for the township, right? They're under no obligation.
Well, sure. You know, and a cynic would say that's how it's going to end up, but I don't think so. I mean, that's not the karma in this deal right now, you know? So I would be, I would encourage us to play out the final part of this negotiation and show our good faith and approve it.
I agree with Mark. Many people have worked many hours trying to bring this to fruition, and any changes that we try to make, Doug, at this point, it would require a revote from the township trustees as well, and a huge amount of time could pass again, as it has, as we've been, this has been going on for about a year and a half. And so I think it, I hear your concerns, but I think these are guidelines. They're discussion for discussion purposes, and this council or the next council will make decisions along the way. I think we're in pretty good hands to handle that, and I'm not afraid that somebody's not going to get the city's due amount going forward. I think it would be a huge mistake at this point to try to make changes that would require a revote by the township.
You know, and I will say for the record that I think that what the mayor has done is we've negotiated this, has established kind of a best practice, which is to keep the council informed as the changes are made and as discussions proceed with the township. The fact that, you know, over the last year we have had some executive session meetings where he's briefed us have been very helpful. And, you know, I'm much more comfortable being in the place where I am right now because of that background. And so I would expect that we would have the same process in place from the administration moving forward.
Okay, so this agreement requires that the parties agree to the annexation of an initial specific property to be identified by us, to which the township will not oppose, and will negotiate a service payment to be made by the city to the township, utilizing as a guide the amount Exhibit A attached hereto. Said amount to be based upon the amount of revenue received by the city as a result of the annexation of said property. So, under this agreement, we have a duty to identify a parcel.
If we want the township to not oppose an annexation, that's the triggering event. If we identify a parcel and we say, okay, we really want to work with the township, we think this annexation is one that would be great for revenue sharing for whatever reason, and try to work with them to identify a reciprocal. In my mind, it's a two-step process. We go to them with a property that we've identified that we're going to pursue annexing, and at the same token, we work with them to determine a property that they will agree to a jet on.
So as a practical matter, this would not apply to...
And in exchange, they agree not to oppose our annexation.
Okay, so we would not use this in the situation in which parcel was within our water district and we were...
Correct.
And we had agreements on
correct.
File.
Right.
So a parcel that would meet
access would be Centennial Quarry.
Actually, the parcel we had proposed would have been the northeast corner of King and Sylvania.
Okay, which is perfectly, that's exactly.
Which they have chosen not to participate with. And they're developing it out without the city and without an income tax on it. In exchange, we looked at other parcels farther out in the township, not adjacent to the city limits, which could not be annexed. And they were not interested in that either. As they feel as trustees that they cannot ever agree not to oppose an annexation and not face opposition to their reelection.
And what's the point of doing this deal?
To bring the both parties to the table three times a year to keep talking.
Well, and you know what? At some point in the future, the optimist in me tells me that at some point in the future, there will be a deal that is in both entities' economic interest so much that we can't pass it up. And I think this, if nothing else, it'll leave the door open for that.
I agree. It shows we're talking and trying to cooperate.
Right.
Okay. This agreement says, the township agrees it will identify a property or properties that could form the basis for establishing a joint economic development district. I'm just reading the words. I'm not reading the, I know what you negotiated. This says that the language is, we'll identify a property and they'll identify a property. Not, and that those are absolute obligations under this memorandum of understanding. But that's not the intent.
Because no properties have been identified.
And agreed upon. Properties have been identified, but not agreed upon. No? Anita?
Doug, in the interest of the
time.
Yeah, I think we'll, we've discussed this, but we're not going to resolve this. We can resolve. I don't want to do this agreement. I'll just lay that out there.
So. I think we should at least take it to council. Unless we have some other specific course that we want to investigate.
And if the other members of council, if the other members of the committee, and if they want, if you want to recommend this to council, that's fine. It wouldn't be offended by that.
Okay, so I have to move that we recommend to council consideration of ordinance number 82-2016.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Aye. 3-1, so we'll go to council. Thank you. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting. And we'll take 5 minutes.
We'll take 5 minutes. We'll get